This week on F8, The Photographer's Perspective, I interview Rick and Susan Salmon, authors of The Oregon Coast Photo Road Trip, How to Eat, Stay, Play, and Shoot Like a Pro. I've been fortunate to work alongside some of the world's most inspiring photographers. I've watched how they've helped others at our conferences and transformed the way they see through the lens. Welcome, I'm your host, Chris Smith, founder of Out of Chicago. This is F8, The Photographer's Perspective, the show where we have candid conversations and go in-depth with the pros to get to know them better. Join us each week as we discuss photography, get to know their personal perspectives, and introduce you to new places and experiences, helping you get the most out of your creative passion. Today on The Photographer's Perspective, I interview two of my favorite photographers, Rick and Susan Salmon. Rick is a Canon Explorer of Light and author of 39, working on 40 books. And Susan is Rick's better half, sorry, Rick, and often, sometimes gets photos just as good or better than Rick on their trips, as Rick's shooting with a DSLR and she's got her iPhone. So welcome to the show, Rick and Susan.
Well, thank you so much for having us, Chris. I just want to congratulate you on all your everything that you're doing, your Out of Oregon event. I'm so honored to be a presenter there along with Alex Morley, along with Nick Page, and Susan's going to be there. And she is my better half. We were at dinner the other night, and someone said something about another couple. I said, same for me. I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Susan.
Absolutely.
Glad to be on the podcast, and we're glad to talk about Oregon since we love Oregon and we love photography. So there you go. Perfect.
Yeah, this is kind of the perfect storm because we have you guys. Rick's one of the featured instructors at Out of Oregon Landscape Photography Conference. And you guys just released, I think actually just today, right? The Oregon Coast Photo Road Trip, How to Eat, Stay, Play, and Shoot Like a Pro. Did I get that right? I wrote it down, so I hope so.
Definitely got it right. And, the book is dedicated to Alex Morley, who's also an instructor there. And, you know, I saw some of his pictures about 6 years ago. He inspired us to go. And we've been there, what, five times? And, I go there, with my camera, my tripod, and ND filters and all this stuff, and telephoto lens and wide angle. And Susan goes there with her iPhone. And it's really a good combination because on the Oregon coast, it doesn't matter really what kind of camera you have if you want to get great pictures.
I totally agree.
Yeah, so we'll talk a little bit about like what's the advantage to having the DSLR and all the fancy accessories, and what's the advantage of just shooting with your iPhone sometimes. But first, talk about a little bit about Alex Morley. How'd you meet up with him in the first place, and tell us a little bit about Alex. Like you said, he's going to be one of our instructors as well at the event.
So I'm teaching a workshop in Bosque del Apache. This was about 6 years ago, and we have, 18 people or something like that. And he's down the end of the table, and I'm at the other end, and he's showing pictures on his iPhone, like at the other end of the table. And even though it was far away, they were bursting with color. So I got up after I finished my third margarita, and I walked down the end, and I said, where were those pictures taken? Because I didn't know them. And he said, the Oregon coast. And the next year, we were on the Oregon coast doing a workshop with Alex as our co-leader. You know, he's an MD. He's a doctor. He runs urgent care centers now. But isn't he the most wonderful person?
He is. And he lives in Oregon. He loves the coast. And he loves photography. And he guided us, or he shared with us some of his most wonderful places where he goes. So we're so grateful, and we've had a lot of good times together because every time you go to these places, they're fresh again. Something happens in the sky or something, and it's great.
Oh, speaking of that, tell Chris and the audience the sunset story on Bandon Beach.
Oh, okay. So you never know what's going to happen in Oregon. The things change very quickly, the weather and conditions. So one year we had a horse and rider, and I had scheduled for her to come to the beach exactly like half an hour before sunset and everything like that. And I have it all set up, but this big fog rolled in. So I'm on my iPhone and I'm talking to her I said, where are you? Where are you? You know, the sun is setting. She goes, I'm here. I'm here. I said, well, I don't see you. And literally the fog was so bad. She was 10 feet in front of me. I didn't see her. So that was a foggy one.
Yeah, and I've seen some of both of your shots of the horses on the beach, and yeah, it's phenomenal. Great place to do that, and Bandon Beach is great. The reflections and everything, that's somewhere I've actually never been and always wanted to. So,
well, the rock formations there, Face Rock in the background, Howling Dog, all the other rocks, you know, the horse and rider are nice, but
they make it so interesting.
You have this, yeah. But talk about the weather changing. The last workshop we were there, we had the horse and rider on the beach. And, you know, this is what everyone wants to do, horse and rider on the beach at sunset, right? So we get there, it's totally overcast.
Just gray.
It's just gray. And we're there for about an hour shooting the horse with the gray, trying to make it fun for the people. Miraculously, for about 5 minutes, the sun came out. We had this beautiful golden
just
light.
When there was a little break in the cloud at the horizon line. And it came through, and it changed everything. It was so amazing.
Yes. So for the people going to your great event there out of Oregon, you know, you have to be patient. You know, the weather's going to change and embrace the situation. You can, you know, as you know, Chris, the most important thing in a picture is the mood, it's the feeling, it's the emotion. And you can get some really beautiful pictures on cloudy, overcast days. It doesn't have to be sunny.
So let's talk a little bit about the book, because it talks about the great locations to go to, but there's so much more than that. And this is actually your second book now in the series that you guys wrote together, right?
Yes. So the idea behind the book is that, you know how you have that best friend who's been everywhere, and so before you go on a trip, you call them up and say, where should I stay? What restaurant should I go to? Where am I going to go to take my sunrise pictures? Well, that's what the book is. It's not every single place on the Oregon coast. We've been there many times, and we say, this is like the prime cut. Like, here's a location while you're there. Take these pictures, go to see these beautiful nature walks, and also here's a good place to have some delicious fresh seafood. So we kind of made it like, as I said, it's your BF that you can call up and say, where should I go when I go to Oregon?
Yeah, I mean, when you do a workshop like this, it's so much more, or anyone that takes a trip to do photography, it's so much more than just getting the pictures at the end on your hard drive. It's the experience behind it. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
That fills in the whole experience, is being with other people and doing these things.
Plus, plus you want to stay close to the places. You don't want to wake up and have to drive like an hour and a half to the sunrise, right? Or after the sunset, drive an hour and a half back. So we pick the best places closest to the best locations. So in addition to all that, it's kind of like a mini course in landscape and seascape photography with a mirrorless camera, a digital SLR, or an iPhone camera.
That's right. So the book is really two things when we say photo road trip. So it's information about going there and where you stay and where you take pictures, but then it's good photography information for these conditions, like when you're shooting a landscape or when the conditions are changing. So yeah, it has both. So it's half and half.
Yeah, and I really like what you say about it. It's just like the best cut, because that's the best way to teach people. It reminds me of like Scott Kelby. When he does a Photoshop book, he says, this is how I do it. I think it's the best way. He doesn't spend pages and pages on all the things and then go, I don't really do any of that. It's just the best stuff. That's what people want to hear.
Yeah, we call it the prime cut.
Yes, exactly.
And that's how, isn't it, with our busy lives, that's the way most of us like to do things, is let's just, get me there. Do the good stuff.
Because most of the people that are coming on something like yours or ours, it's like, you know, I only have like 5 or 6 vacation days that I can dedicate just to photography, but I don't want to waste them. I just want to see the very best stuff. Yeah. That I make the most of it.
Yeah. You could do this trip in 5 days and have a great trip. How long is your event?
It's 5 days. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
How perfect is that?
Nick Page is going to be there, right?
Yeah. Nick's going to be one of our instructors. Like you said, Alex, we have so many people, Ian Plant, so many. I mean, the key for what we do is just the same thing as what you did with Alex, is you have to have the people that have all the professional photography skills, but then you have to have the people that know the locations better than anyone. And you put that combination together and you get something special.
Yes. And speaking of special, Nick is really a special guy. He has not been taking pictures for that long. You know, he came, Alex invited him to give a presentation in one of our workshops, and he blew everyone away. So we got to be friends with him. He brought his son. He's a great dad, too, like you. And as you know, this is very, very important to us, being a great dad. And he wrote the foreword to the book, which is quite an honor for us. He said it's an honor for him. Well, it's an honor for us, too. So it's really great, I think, being associated with all these people and your event there, the Out of Oregon event, I think it's just going to blow people away, because I remember you're out of Arches. Was it out of Moab?
We called it out of Moab, but yeah, uh-huh.
Yeah, yep. That was amazing. And even though the weather wasn't great, I mean, everyone had a smile on their face because they're in this community and they're learning so much, not only from the instructors, but from the other people.
And you know what I'd like to say is that each photographer that we've been talking about, like Rick's images of Oregon, look different than mine and look different from Alex and look different from Nick Page's. So everyone can really find, don't you think?
Yeah, yeah.
Like a way to express their images, even though we're standing in the same place, no, everybody's not going to look the same. So that's one of the other things we really love about the Oregon coast.
And did our listeners notice that I did not say welcome to the Out of Chicago podcast? I said welcome to the Photographer's Perspective. Okay. We have Rick and Susan on here for, we're going to do a little name change, and they're here for the first one. But it's exactly what you're talking about, Susan, that you go to this location, but everyone has their own perspective on it. And I love what Rick always says. You know, he has people come out to his, what do you call it, your backyard workshop? Is that right?
Yeah.
And it's places you've shot millions of times, and people see it in a totally different way. That's what this is all about.
No, it's really great. And, you know, you are going to learn from the other people there. You don't, there's a joke. What's the difference between a professional photographer and an amateur photographer? Well, one of the differences, the professional doesn't have to show his or her bad shots.
Right.
Yeah. I get bad shots. So some of these amateurs get better pictures than us in some situations, or different pictures, I should say.
Well, because we like to sit and process together afterwards. And I know you guys do that too with your Out of series. And that's great, because I love to walk around and look over people's shoulders and just get so excited for saying, wow, I was standing right there and look what you've captured. It's so exciting.
Right. And I think that's the key to teaching and learning, whether it's you guys or us, is that you teach them something new, but you do it in a location where then they can try it. And then you give them immediate feedback right there. And they'd say, oh, okay, I should have done it like that. And then the next day they go out and try it just like that.
Use it.
Yeah. So let's talk about the differences. You're going on a trip. Rick's doing the DSLR. Susan's got her iPhone. There's advantages to both. Where do you guys want to start?
Well, I'm going to let Rick talk about his, but I'm just going to say for packing, my job is really easy. Okay, Rick has got, but I always help him bring the heavy lenses, just so you know.
No, the packing is a big thing. I think one of the big advantages, especially on the Oregon coast, you know, most people want to get that dreamy water, that cottony water, that silky water. So with a digital SLR or mirrorless, I've switched, by the way, to totally.
Well, we're going to talk about that in a second, too.
I mean, I've totally switched. Antarctica, I was totally mirrorless. We're going to the high Arctic.
It's exciting.
It's very exciting.
It's exciting.
But for that silky water effect, although Susan is going to talk about the dreamy water effect that you can
get. Yeah, make a note. I can tell you how to do it with an iPhone.
I mean,
too.
With the iPhone, with no tripod, no ND filter. But the thing is, as she'll say, it's a little different. But if you want total control over that and catch the waves at different times and, you know, shoot from like 10 seconds to a quarter of a second and shoot with the ND filter and get the water coming in and coming out, you have much, much more control. With the mirrorless, which is not to say Susan might get exactly the same shot, depending on how fast the water is moving, how close she is, and whatever. There are also, and for your listeners, yes, you know, I think a lot of people want to get, you know, that dreamy water, the seascapes, but there's also amazing wildlife there. You know, it's Seal Rock. Strawberry Hill? Yeah, you go in there, right?
I think so, yep. Seal Rock for sure. I know, yeah. But we're also going to do like the aquarium that's right there in Newport.
So you have the puffins.
Yeah.
So we got amazing pictures of the puffins. And I have a tip for that in just a couple of minutes.
It's not easy.
It's not. Well, you have to shoot as fit, you know, maybe a 2/1000th of a second because they're going so fast. You have to dial down if you're on the automatic mode, maybe dial down about 2 stops because you have, you know, those white feathers against the black feathers in the back. But anyway, you also want to bring a telephoto lens. I had the 100 to 400 millimeter lens. Alex got some amazing shots with his, I think it was a 600 millimeter lens or a 200 to 400 with an extender. So for the real serious photographer who wants to get, you know, the super tight shots of the distant animals like the seals or the sea lions in Newport Harbor, they come up on the dock, which is really cool. You can shoot wider and you can shoot closer, but, you know, there is a price to pay, and that's taking you know, like a 40-pound backpack and a 10-pound really right stuff tripod.
But tell them how you actually, like, what you bring, right? You always bring two. I always say, why are you bringing so much stuff? He goes, you have to bring two of everything.
Two, right? What happens if a camera, you know, something happens, right?
Yeah, well, that's kind of, that could be the difference between the professional and the amateur, too, is that the professional has a backup. If something goes wrong, they've got a way to make sure they still get the shot.
Yep, absolutely. Plus, with the digital SLR, you can make bigger prints.
I have a story which is going to reinforce that it's a good idea to have backup. So we've done this Oregon Coast workshop many times, and we love bringing people to different places. So we protect ourselves going into the tide pools. The tide pools aren't deep, but, you know, you have to have your feet protected and everything. And this one lady who was on the trip, she lost her footing, okay? She lost her footing. She was holding her camera, and then in the pockets of her vest, she had her other photo gear. She just dipped, like just almost slipped into a puddle that was only 6 inches deep and stood up, and everything was ruined.
Oh.
Her camera, her lens, and in her thing was her iPhone. Everything got ruined in 1 second. So, you know, it was like the freak thing. We hope it doesn't happen to anybody else. But here's the thing. Other people on the trip were there, so people kind of set her up. She had a new phone FedEx to her to the hotel the next day, and, you know, she replaced everything. But, you know, things can...
Yeah, I was interested when I saw Art Wolf do a video. You know, we both love Art Wolf. All three of us, I should say. and he was doing a video where he only had the one camera. And I think I asked him, you know, I can't believe you only have one. He was in Antarctica or whatever, and he's only got one camera. He goes, well, I got the other ones back on the boat. So it's like, I definitely got more, yeah.
You can't FedEx out to the boat there.
So. Right, exactly, yeah. All right, so Susan, your turn.
Yeah.
Okay, what do we want to talk about?
Oh, you got to tell us why Rick is wrong and why people would be better off just taking their iPhone.
Okay, this particular trip, doing a landscape trip, is a great trip for iPhone photography because this camera is really set up to do wide angle. It does it very well. And, you know, when we go on safari, I have to tell you, I take very few pictures because, you know, I don't have a telephoto lens. And even the telephotos they have, I don't think really do a successful job. Digital zooming doesn't do a successful job. So this does a really good job with wide angle. The other thing is when we want to do creative work, like putting something in the foreground, when I see these guys really have to struggle putting their tripod and all these things, I could just hold mine down, you know, click 10, take a look at it and click it again. So it's ripple. So you can kind of move it around into nooks and crannies, things like that. And when we get back to it, the apps can take these images and really, really make them pop. And I like to do that. And I might, in the book, the images there on the iPhone, you can tell some of them, I push, you know, the color, I push the saturation, I push the effects, because I enjoy doing it. I like the results. So the apps really help me do that.
And the people love it. You know, like we have one picture in the book. It's kind of funny. Everyone has a really right stuff tripod set up and their $5,000 cameras and everything. We're waiting for the sunrise and all the tripods are abandoned. And there's like all those students are around Susan watching her process a picture, making it dramatic black and white or making using the Ansel Adams effect or Snapseed.
I think I was actually putting a sun rising in it. You know, it wasn't even up yet.
You know, I just wish that the camera manufacturers would make it more fun by putting, you know, the in-camera HDR, as you know, especially with the Canon cameras with the Art Vivid mode, it's cool. It's fun. You know, I think the camera manufacturers, all of them, need to make it more fun if they want to continue this, you know, compete, you know, with the iPhones. I think the compact cameras, they could have had all this stuff in there. The apps are and actually, the book leads off with a chapter by me on my type of photography with the mirrorless and the SLR. And then it's followed by a chapter by Susan with her iPhone. And it's interesting to see the two different approaches. And Susan's pictures, you know, I'm kind of serious. I'm not a serious guy, but I'm serious about my photography. But Susan's pictures are fun.
And I think with an iPhone, another thing that I think is an advantage for me is that I can just grab a shot.
Like, yeah.
You know, Rick has, you know, because you have to do the settings and you have to do all this, where if I see somebody jumping over a puddle, I have a picture of Rick doing that, jumping over a puddle, I could just go click and just get it. where I think it's a little bit, takes a little bit more time. You might have to say to somebody, could you jump over that puddle again and get the shot? So there's that spontaneous nature of it.
Right. So tell us what apps you use. I heard you say Snapseed. I read your section in the book, actually. Go ahead.
Okay. Snapseed, which we actually know the guys who developed it. They were original, the Nick guys. Do you know
right.
that?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep. I don't know them, but I knew the story. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's a great story, and they were very nice guys. And Snapseed, so it used to be a product you used to have to buy. Now it's free. And if you had one app that you needed to get, that's the one I would get. It's really, really powerful. It does a lot of things. So, you know, the usual things where you're taking tone and texture and all of those things. But we were talking about lighthouses recently. We were out, remember we were taking lighthouses?
Down in Florida.
Down in Florida, we took a lighthouse picture. You know, when you stand close to it and the perspective is wrong, it looks like it's falling down.
Mm-hmm.
Or not in Snapseed, there's perspective. Oh, and we're on the photographer's perspective. This is so cool. Perspective correction. And in 1 second in the parking lot, I was able to straighten out the lighthouse. You know, I put a little bit of texture in it in Snapseed, and I was ready to post it on Facebook, which is exactly what I did. So Snapseed and is wonderful. The other one is Dramatic Black and White, and quite a few of the Dramatic Black and Whites are in the book.
Yeah.
Because you know those coastal pictures when you want, there's a lot of gray days, so when you want to really do some really interesting black and white, that's a very, very nice one. It's called Dramatic Black and White. And then another one that Rick and I both love is Distressed FX. Did you ever see that one?
Well, I saw your photos in the book from it. Yeah, uh-huh. Really cool. Oh,
it's very, very strong in texture, but you could also add clouds. And one of the pictures of the book is Bandon Beach at one of those sunsets with the rider, and there's nothing going on in the sky. It's just like blue, and it just like is really kind of dull. And there's 20 different cloud styles, and I put a cloud in and you dial it down till it looks real. So in addition to pushing it, you can also make it look realistic. So those would be my three favorites.
And these apps are so cool. I use them too, but what I have to do is I have to go back.
Yes, yeah.
Some of my pictures in the book, I use Distressed FX. So what I have to do is I have to take my memory card out, put it in my laptop, you know, download it, put it in my photos, and open it in the app, and take it out of the app and put it back in, you know. So the apps, I think, they've changed everything.
Well, I'm looking for the picture of us in the book, you know, where we put our little words of wisdom there. And it's actually at
Yakina.
The new Yakina Head, Newport Lighthouse. And we used Distress FX to put fake birds in the picture. So
now I got to go back and look at that.
Use that as our picture of the book.
That's great.
You know, like a joke. People now get used to that. We use it a lot. Rick uses it, I use it. They go, there are those birds again, because we keep putting them in a lot of pictures.
You know, like Alfred Hitchcock put himself in the movies, we put the birds.
We put the birds in.
Yeah. I mean, kind of like his movie, The Bird. Sure, right. It's both ways. Yeah. I get it. F8, The Photographer's Perspective is brought to you by Out of Chicago. Out of Chicago brings together passionate enthusiasts with world-class photographers all in one epic location where you learn and shoot side-by-side with the pros. Since 2014, we've organized hands-on photography conferences in Chicago, New York City, Moab, and more. We are all photographers ourselves, so we understand what it takes to be inspired, get to the right place at the right time, and live our best creative life. So if you were to ask, I mean, this is like the big difference. If you were to ask a DSLR mirrorless shooter, you know, did you get any good pictures? Their answer is always, well, you'll ask me again when I get home from the trip. If you ask a iPhone shooter, did you get any good pictures? They go, oh, yeah, I already have 200 likes on Instagram. Yeah.
Right. Perfect. Exactly. That's the truth.
And is that what you do, Susan? Post to Instagram, I assume?
I do Instagram and I do Facebook. And it just is a joy to be able to process the images right away. I mean, I think that's, you know, I don't have to go back and I miss that. I don't have to do that download step.
right.
You know,
what is your
waiting things, you know, the things are blinking and they're waiting for their images to get onto their laptop. Mine is just like, it's just,
they're already up. Yeah.
They're already up.
Yeah. What is your Instagram handle or whatever you call it, Susan?
100.
Say it again.
Subee, S-U-B-E-E 100.
Perfect. All right. We will check that out then.
Yeah.
And well, Rick, what's yours too? I'm sure we should ask that, right? We should be fair. Even though I think Susan ended up winning that argument, we'll let you give yours as well.
It's Rick Salmon Photography.
Perfect. On Instagram. Very good. So, Rick, give us a couple of your favorite seascape photo tips. These are some of the things you'll be teaching at the event at Out of Oregon and some of the things that people can go out and shoot on the beach and do with you. So give us a couple of your favorite tips.
Well, the first one, and Susan kind of touched on it, is safety first. These rocks can be very slippery because, you know, you want to be there at low tide, right? Because when you're there at low tide, the starfish are out, the sea anemones are out, and the water just looks great, and the rocks are exposed, the mussels are exposed.
Yeah, those, whatever, the beach is all reflective.
That's right, all those beautiful reflections. So you have to think about safety first. You're going to be going down rocky paths, sandy paths. You're going to be going down stairs that were built like 50 years ago. So always keep safety first. And as you're going to a location, keep your, well, Susan's going to keep her, is going to keep her iPhone, you know, in a fanny pack, but you want to keep all your gear in a padded backpack, well padded, and you want it packed correctly because it's not impossible that you're going to slip. We were in a Devil's Punch Bowl on the first day there.
Oh my goodness.
We went through the safety briefing a lot. And within 1 minute, someone fell and he hit his head on the back.
He's okay.
He's okay.
He's a good
okay?
guy. Yeah.
No, it is very, so safety is paramount. So then comfort, before we get to the photo tips. Okay. You're going to be walking through tide pools, where you're going to get these unbelievable pictures of the animals exposed. So you want to wear, rather than rubber boots, although some people like to wear knee-high rubber boots, I like to wear those Neos, N-E-O-S, Neos.
Yep, I bought them based on your recommendation. They're great. Yep.
Right. Well, what's great about them is what they are is they're overshoes, and they could basically waterproof overshoes that basically fold flat, so you could put them in the top of your backpack. The advantage to that is when you're hiking around, you don't have to wear these clunky boots. You only wear the clunky boots when you're in the water. So I think that also, if you're in a Strawberry Hill, you might be climbing around some rocks to get up so you could photograph the seals. We've been there 5 years. Every year there are seals down the left-hand side. Every year. So you may want to have some rubber gloves. So, and a raincoat. And a rain, what I call a built-in raincoat for your backpack. You know, those that they come out. Well, the think tank, they come separate. But like the low pros have the built-in raincoat.
Yeah, I've had people where I show them that and they're like, I had no idea that was there. But when it rains, you should pull that part out. Exactly. Uh-huh.
And speaking of keeping your gear safe, having a lint-free cloth all the time, because you're going to have this wind and you want to keep all this salt spray off your lens. And also, if you're going to change lenses, change a lens with the wind at your back, because you don't want anything off.
Block the wind, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Block the wind. So I would say my number one tip, a photo tip, would be to bring a tripod and an ND filter and a wide-angle lens to get those beautiful seascapes. Although, it's pretty funny, the cover of our book here, just taken like a handheld at a relatively fast shutter speed. So it all depends on the mood and the feeling you want to create.
Yeah, well, you don't want all your shots to look the same anyway, so why would you use the same settings and the same gear for all the pictures? Yeah, all
right.
Different things to do, for sure. Susan, do you have any particular seascape photo tips when you're shooting with your iPhone, or is it kind of the same?
You know what? I do a lot of walking around. When we get to a location, like a lot of people, they just get in there and they set up, okay? And
that's the thing with the tripod, isn't it? It's like, well, I got my tripod here. I'm going to stay.
So the wandering iPhone photographer, so I'll like wander up and down in a location and I can find sometimes something a little interesting that somebody didn't look at. I can sometimes find a close-up opportunity that people didn't see. And then I'm always happy to go back to the group and say, hey, when you're finished with that, come see this over here. So my tip would be, you know, take some time, you know, to take a look at the whole location. Actually, one of my favorite pictures I took the last trip was when we were underneath the other lighthouse, which is the one in Florence. It's the Cedar Head.
Yeah.
Which is, there's so many places to shoot there. And somebody had done some stacking of rocks, this rock balancing. Mm-hmm. And so people were taking pictures of it, and then they were scooting off because there's so many things to take pictures of. And I went inside the cave and I waited. And I waited and I waited for everybody to get out of the picture, because now I'm in the cave looking out and people are dashing. And I waited for the sky to change to be this very mellow pastel-y colors. And it really went with the rocks. And I took a picture there, and it's like actually my favorite from that trip. So again, a little bit more of a take your time and look around. You can get overwhelmed by the big stuff, though.
But this is a really good tip. Like, you know, people ask me, I'm sure we've talked about this on your podcast or at your events. People ask me all the time, hey, Rick, what's your f-stop, right? They want to know my setting. How many times have I come up to you and said, where did you take that picture? Because yes. She walks
well,
around.
I come and I share it. So if I took something, I'll say to Rick, I said, what do you think? And I go, and if he says, like, whoa, where was that? Come on, everybody. That means it was good, right?
That's so. Seal Rock, that picture you took in the morning.
Yeah.
But also talk about your iPhone, that blurred water effect that you can get.
Okay, you want the best secret?
This is a good secret.
Okay, yeah, I want all the secrets.
Okay, this is the secret. So there is a way to take a long exposure with an iPhone. Okay, so I actually have to put my glasses on for this one. So when you go into camera mode, right, there's a thing called live. Do you know there's that live where it shoots that little video clip?
Yep.
So you have to turn that on. It turns yellow, and there's a little box that says live. So when you're holding your phone, now I'm going to take a picture of this waterfall, right? I'm going to take a picture of waterfall, and I have to hold very, very still. I take the picture, and I'm holding very still because now it's recorded it. When you pull that picture up on your screen, the secret is you flip up the picture. You flip the picture up with your finger, and underneath there are settings that say loop and long exposure. Believe it or not, it's in there.
It's actually built into the phone, just no one knows.
And most people don't know that it's there. And I don't know, Apple keeps it a secret. I don't know why it's a secret, but it's a secret. But you flip it up and it says effect. So it says live, loop, bounce, and the fourth one is called long exposure.
Hold that up to the camera. Let's see it.
Okay. Oh, well, I don't have a waterfall. So, just
what the settings look like, kind of.
Oh, okay. So let's see. Let's see if we can do this. Can you see it? So I'm going to... I'll flip it up, so I'll show you how that works, and then underneath here, see?
Yeah, that's what I wanted to see.
Exposure one. So you can do it. You know how I tested it the first time? Go in your kitchen and run the water in the sink.
Oh, we're all going to be trying that after this is over. Yes, uh-huh.
Well, the good news, yeah, and actually that's how Susan demonstrates it. We go around the sinks and water fountains, but actually Susan's going to be out of Oregon also. And although she's not officially an instructor,
there's a waterfall, you'll see me there.
A waterfall or moving water or crashing waves like at Thor's.
Oh, okay, so it worked well, and I think we should talk about it. One of
Sprouting
the
horn.
Super dramatic, most dramatic places ever to photograph is the combination there.
Thor's Well and Sprouting Horn.
Sprouting Horn. So
We went there. That place is kind of scary. But yes, that's crazy with all the water moving all over the place, right? So that's perfect for what you're talking about.
Well, Thor's Well is like, I don't know, maybe it's about 6 feet wide, maybe 6 or 8 feet wide. I don't know, maybe 10. And when the water comes in, you know, it fills us up and then it goes down. But I think it's actually someone got sucked out. So talk about being careful. You want to listen so closely to the instructors when they're out there, because they're going to give you a safety briefing first. Anyway, so Thor's Well is very dramatic, especially at sunset. But then Sprouting Horn is, if you're looking at Thor's Well, it's off to the left. And this is like a water sprouting up, and you got a beautiful, dramatic.
It comes into a channel. So here's another thing, and we want to say thanks to Alex Morley, who was able not only to show us these wonderful places, but to give us the tip, which is you really have to be at these places at the right time. So Sprouting Horn doesn't spout unless the tide is high and rushing in, right? Yeah. And the same thing with Thor's Well. Thor's Well is like Thor's, you know, puddle at the right time. And so with the Sprouting Horn, when it's like, it doesn't seem like much, but if you're there at the right time, it comes up, it like a fountain, and it's very protected, and it's not a dangerous spot. I mean, there's railings there, and anybody could really access it.
But not Thorswell.
But not Thorswell is just open. But these areas, so my favorite, I use that slow, long exposure to take a really nice picture of the group. So there was Rick with three students, and they all have their tripods, and so they're silhouetted. And with this, so I was able to get the water rushing behind them and all of them there. Actually, I think Rick is like, has his hand out, and he's like grabbing somebody and steadying them.
Yeah, I believe it. So that's great. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, just sort of following up on what Susan said, one of the things we talk about in the book is the importance of checking the tides. Okay, so you have there are several tide chart apps. So you definitely want to be there at low tide or minus low tide.
As I said, Alex Worley is like a master.
Yeah, he's a master.
How could there be a minus tide? He knows.
Yeah.
right.
Low tide is low tide. He says, no, you want to be at minus low tide.
So my story, and she's going to kill me, is, my team and I, we're all from Chicago, the Midwest. You know, the Great Lakes, there's no real tide at all. So the first time we went to Acadia and we were driving in, and Michelle goes, I think everything dried up. It looks terrible. Michelle, it's low tide. We'd never seen it. So that was it. And we drove by later. I was like, no, that's what it's supposed to look like. So yeah, we're not used to dealing with that, but everything changes based on, it's not just sunset, sunrise. It's got to look at the tides.
Well, it's all tied together. Are you guys going to a Devil's Punch Bowl?
Yeah, that'll be one of the places. Yep.
Okay. So Devil's Punch Bowl, you want to be there right when the tide is low. Okay, and you want to shoot and you want to get out before the tide comes up, because it's not impossible that you could get trapped in there. So this is why it's so important to check the tides and to listen to the instructors and to not wander off by yourself. Like in scuba diving, we had the buddy system, right? We were always together in case something happened. You ran out of air or whatever. So I think we don't want to say it's dangerous, but it you just have to be careful, because it's not like shooting on Lake Michigan or Lake Ontario or any of the Great Lakes.
Right. I hear these stories all the time. And part of it is just that we get so wrapped up into our photography. We're having, we're really enjoying it, trying to get the perfect shot. And the next thing you know, the tide has come in and you're in a spot where you're going to have to almost swim to get back because you weren't paying attention. So I keep hearing that too.
Well, another thing, the tide can come in or the waves could come in, and say you put your camera bag down and you wander off.
Right, yeah.
The camera bag may be soaked. But, this is some of your listeners are, this is mostly an audio podcast, right?
Yeah. No, but let's, I can put out parts of the video too, so here we go.
So anyway, we have a spread here in the book of one of the lighthouses here. And on the left is Susan's and on the right is mine. And you'd be hard-pressed to tell what kind of camera took either shot.
We do we love the lighthouses on the Oregon coast.
Oh, man.
Okay, so in each of the locations in the book, we have like four places you stay. They always feature a lighthouse. Now, I have another app called Lens Flare.
Oh, yeah.
So many of these lighthouses are decommissioned. They're decommissioned. They're not really lighthouses. Or one at Hasita Head was being refurbished, so they actually took the light out. So there, I know that you guys could do it in Photoshop, but there's another iPhone app, and it's called Lens Flare. And you can, there you go, you can put the light in the lighthouse. And you know what? It makes the picture come alive. And you can have a series of them if you come on out of Newport. You can have a series of them, because I think you'll have at least three lighthouses.
So Susan's going on and on about all these apps. Well, look how sharp this picture is, Chris. That picture's really sharp.
I don't have any seals. And
she doesn't have any seals.
And the puffins, we said it was hard. Let me tell you, people took hundreds of pictures, and they were hard-pressed to find one that they loved.
Of the puffins?
Because the why is it so hard?
They move so fast, and you're so close, so the speed is exaggerated, right? Mm-hmm. So for the Newport Aquarium, a lot of people might say, I'm going to the Oregon coast. Chris Smith and his group is taking us to the aquarium. Let me tell you, we got amazing shots
there. One of the high points. Everybody loves it.
That's really one of the high points. The puffins are great. The jellyfish are really fun to photograph. There are some other shore birds there. But the best thing is...
I know what he's going to say.
The best thing is across the street from the Rogue Brewery.
It's the Rogue Brewery.
That's right, Rogue Brewery. We're going for sure. Yep.
Okay.
I was going to wear my dead guy shirt here.
Rick, actually,
You should have.
He has a wardrobe now. He has the long sleeve tee, the short sleeve tee, and he got the hoodie. So he has the complete Rogue dead guy wardrobe.
Is that your favorite, the dead guy? Is that of the Rogue beers?
Oh, the Rogue beer, the dead guy, is just amazing. And they sell it here now. And again, we have to thank Alex for turning this on to the dead guy.
Yeah, you know what I had when I was there? The hotel that was putting us up, they left it in our room. It was super, super nice. Was a Rogue Brewery, like, whiskey.
Whiskey?
But the topper to the bottle was one of the little dead guys. It was awesome. So,
we need to go back to the gift shop.
We need to
exactly.
We gotta get.
Anyway, the program that you have, Chris, the aquarium, Devil's Punch Bowl, Newport in and of itself. Right, that harbor, we shot there at night. We were doing HDR shots of the ships, and we go there in the day, and the sea lions come up, and they're very noisy. And just one thing about the sea lions, and another tip is...
They're stinky.
Well, they're stinky, but you have to respect the subject, right? Whether it's you're photographing someone in China where we're going, a person, you want to respect the landscape by not trampling all over it. You want to respect the wildlife. So you could get closer to the sea lions. I forget what the law is. Might be 50 feet. But you don't want to stress them out. So this is why you want to bring a telephoto lens.
I want to say something about Newport. Is a really friendly town. It's it's an active fishing community.
Yeah.
I mean, the little town that you walk on is right across the street from the docks, and the guys really go out, and I see mostly men, go out fishing, and they're really friendly. So you can go down there and you say, hey, are you just going out? Are you just coming in? And they go out for weeks or long periods of times, and they get the fish, and the boats and the reflections of the boats in the harbor are some of, like, we always love to do that too. Everybody's so friendly. I'm like, wait, Rick's thinking something funny.
Rick's got something.
He's not
sure he should share it. Maybe is what it is.
I am going to share it. But this just gave me a great idea, and the book's going to, the next book's going to sell.
Oh, it's a new title.
Or we could redo it. Yeah, you know, the book is called The Orient Coast, The Photo Road Trip, How to Eat, Stay, Play, and Shoot Like a Pro. But now, after this conversation, it should be How to Eat, Stay, Play, Drink. And shoot like
that's right. That's right.
You got the dead guy. You got the whiskey. Maybe you can write the forward.
Just the drinking part of forward. Yeah.
That little dead guy icon and a couple of the pictures. I could do that easily. I'll just do it in an app. Just put it in.
But seriously, Susan is what they call a foodie, mm-hmm. and she really is. She does a lot of research on the.
Like good food.
So, We explored all the best restaurants, so we have that in the book. And
if you love seafood,
my God,
this is fresh seafood land. It's a joy.
Hey, we have to give another shout out to Susan Dymark. Is she going to be teaching there?
Yeah, Susan. Will be there as well. This photo is really cool. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, there's an artist out there who makes these circles in the sand. And it only happens one time a year.
They do a couple of days during a certain time of year.
When the tide is low. But, you know, that's one of the joys we had in putting this book together. We have pictures from her, Alex Morley, Nick Page.
Some of our workshop participants.
Bob Lloyd, some of our workshop participants. The girlfriend of one of our friends, Alex. A different Alex. That's the woman's name. She's the girlfriend of Mike Spike Ince. So we have pictures from other photographers in here, and that was really fun because, you know, like Susan said before, they're getting some pictures that we've never going to get. Here's a picture of Susan having so much fun with her iPhone.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So, Susan Dimmock, we talked with her about having that artist come out. So it's still potential that we may actually do that during the event. Yeah. Well, that would be really cool.
It's like a spiritual, peaceful thing. The idea, like, you know, that you're creating something that's only going to be there for a very short period of time, and the tide will take it out, and that's what it's all it's meant to be. It's beautiful, and people walk around it. It's meditation.
Yeah, you know, that's kind of what I really like about, yeah, that would be really good. So we're still working on that. But that's kind of, to me, what makes our events really fun is that if someone doesn't want to do the puffins, they're like, why, I'm going to the Oregon Coast, why a puffin? What, you know, they don't have to. They get to pick the things that they want to do. And the other really fun part, as we're creating the schedule, which we'll be working on in the next couple of months, I'll talk with Rick and Susan and say, Rick, you know, where do you want to go? What are your favorite things to do? So every photographer is teaching and going to their favorite places, and you get to go with them. But if that's not, if you don't want to do like patterns in the sand, why would I want to do that? Then don't do that. You go do whatever you want, and that makes it fun that everyone kind of gets a choice.
Well, for now, my number two recommendations would be the Rogue Brewery and the Pelican Brewery.
Yes. Lighthouses. We've got bridges. So in Newport there, I mean, you have so many subjects, yeah, in addition to just being the coast, yeah, which in and of itself is a subject. There's all these other things.
Yeah, my one tip, and you've heard me say this before.
The lighthouse is great.
Well, all these things are good, but my general tip for going on one of your events would be you snooze, you lose.
Yep.
And you can sleep when you're dead.
Right,
like
right.
Like the dead guy. Maybe that's who the dead guy is. He's the photographer.
Really? You're going to be
pictures.
There. People are going to come. What's her name? Donette? What's her last name?
Largue.
Yeah, she's coming.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So she's been to all your events. You know, she's going to come from Chicago where her kid lives, right?
Yep.
All the way out there. She may not be there and have all these experts in all different, you know, teaching HDR, seascape photography, landscape photography, processing, you know, all this stuff. You know, I'm sure she's going to be at every event. So you definitely can sleep when you're dead.
When we did Acadia, that was the first landscape one that we did. We said, you know what, we'll make excursions that go out at 4 a.m. and we'll make excursions that go till 2 a.m. so people can shoot the Milky Way then. I mean, obviously people wouldn't sign up for all of them. They do whatever they want. And of course there's this group of people, they signed up for everything that is out of control. So yeah, so it's available if people want to do it.
So are you going to have a lot of processing sessions?
Yeah, yeah, we definitely will have post-processing sessions as well. We'll have a lot of instructors helping with that, and we'll do one-on-one sessions too. So people could sign up to work with one instructor for 20 minutes and say, hey, here's 5 of my pictures in the week or from previous. You know, can you go over some of them with me? And we'll do image reviews, with big groups too, or, you know, like 10 people in the group. So both.
That is so beneficial. They do that at Photoshop World. We do that on our workshops. That is so beneficial to get the input of the pros, like one-on-one.
Yeah, exactly. And I really like that we're able to do it along with the event. You know, so I tried this yesterday. Here's some feedback. And like we said earlier, now go try it again the next day and see if you can do even better. Yeah. You know, I'm not going to let you get out of here, though, Rick, without talking a little bit about your new camera. So, which camera do you have, and tell us your favorite features of it, because we've been waiting a long time for this.
Yeah, this is the Canon EOS R, and I would say 10 years ago, I said I'm never going mirrorless because, quite frankly, the viewfinder sucked, right? It was grainy and whatever. So today, a lot of people are switching to mirrorless. They say I want smaller and lighter. I think the main reason to switch is because of the viewfinder.
I agree.
It's so good, right? You could see your exposure compensation. You could see your live histogram. Some of the cameras, you could see the zebra patterns with the focusing, right? It's that viewfinder. But there's a benefit. There's another benefit for me as a people photographer. So say I'm photographing you, right? And I'm photographing. I want to see if I got the shot. With my digital SLR, I'd put it down and look at it, right? So because the picture that you take is in your viewfinder, what I could keep the subject engaged without him or her thinking, oh, he's looking down, checking the shot. So that is that's for a people photographer.
Wow, that's good.
I really like that. Now, some people are saying, well, what's he doing going to Antarctica with only a camera with one card slot in it? Well, I was in Antarctica for 2 weeks and I didn't lose one picture. I did have a backup camera, but I'm totally mirrorless, as Susan knows. I sold two of my digital SLRs already, and I have one left. And when the next generation of a mirrorless DR comes out, I honestly don't know when it's going to be. When there's two slots, I'm going to be totally mirrorless. And Scott Kelby just published something on his blog that he's going mirrorless.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of the thing of the future. And I totally agree with you. People want to do it because it's lighter. But I totally agree that it's that electronic viewfinder. I love it. Now, I'm sure you've never had this problem, but like when I photograph birds and they're up in a tree branch, or this would be true in Costa Rica, which I want to talk about in a minute too. But if you're photographing, something with a bright background behind it, I remember back in the DSLR days, I would take like 15 pictures and then look and go, oh man, my bird is underexposed by so much in every one. But now as you're taking the picture with the electronic viewfinder, you see exactly what your final picture is going to look like. And it makes just a world of difference.
Okay. We should be, you are recording this, but we're going to cut a little segment out of what you just said. I think you're the first one in history who ever said back in the digital SLR days.
No. That was the moment.
That was the moment. This is the history changing. The world's going mirrorless. Chris Smith as the back in the, actually, it's funny. I don't want to say the company, but the president of one company thinks that people are going to go back to digital SLRs. Did you see that on Twitter?
I did not. No, I agree with Susan. We'll go back when we go back to film. Yeah.
Right. I think we're going to put everything together in that before.
But there's something else. There's something else about the mirrorless, especially with this camera. Because of the way it's designed, the lens, the rear element of the lens is actually, the thing that's just the lens, so it is actually closer to the image sensor. So you get a sharper picture from corner to corner.
Hmm.
This is another benefit. So I'm loving the, and it is lighter and a little more compact, but it's that, what you, like you said, with the birds in Costa Rica, what you can see is just amazing.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about Costa Rica, because you've been going down there for a little while. You're doing a workshop there, and you just finished and released a course. You do tons of courses for Kelby One. Tell us about this latest one.
Yeah, Susan and I went down there in December to check it out, December of 2018, right?
To Crocodile Bay.
Great place on the Osa Peninsula, which National Geographic called this place the most biologically, and I'm quoting them, the most biologically intense place on the planet. You've been there, right? So you know. Yeah. The bugs, the insects, the monkeys, the birds, everything. It's just amazing, the wildlife there, the flora and fauna. So anyway, we're doing a workshop there in December. It's sold out, but I did a Kelby One class. And because of the diversity, the class is over an hour and a half. Most of their classes are about an hour. But there's so much we wanted to pack in there. And it's not only a photography class, just like our book is not just a photography book. It's about it's about traveling, and you're going to learn about the destination. In the Kelby One class, I have the naturalist there talking, and I interviewed some of the people who run some of the conservation places there. I really wanted to get across the message, the important message of, like as David Attenborough talks about in the series Our Planet, which we love.
There's something to talk about after our planet.
Yeah, talking about the importance of protecting our planet. And yeah, so for the listeners who don't know, you want to talk a little bit about the mind-blowing Our Planet on Netflix?
So Our Planet, you know, remember when Life on Earth came out like 25 years ago? It like was nature photography presented in such a compelling, beautiful way. So when this series came out, I thought to myself, wait, they have David Attenborough. They're going back the same thing. There's going to be safari pictures. There's going to be rainforest pictures. There's going to be polar pictures. But because of the new technology, the way that they present these images using drones and using, you know, what do they call them, traps or things?
Oh, yeah, camera traps.
Where they can have cameras take pictures when nobody's around. The images, I talk about the power of images. Watching the series, Our Planet, will just make you love the planet more, and then we'll jump in and do what we can.
Yeah.
What we can, but that's using images to really impact in a great way. It's amazing.
Yeah, and great video too, right? It's not just images, right?
Yeah, it is.
This technology, they have like this cheetah stalking the prey, and you feel like you're this close because now they have like a, I don't know exactly, but it's like a 1,000 millimeter lens on an image stabilizer, and it's rock steady. And they have drones and these camera traps. So, and they set up, you know, it took years to do
this.
Oh,
my goodness.
It took years. But our planet, if
Netflix.
On Netflix. But the message there, David Attenborough's message is, his message is we can do something about it.
It is. It's positive.
It's positive. We can do something. It's not a doom and gloom thing. It's that we all can do something like we do, like recycle and, you know, whatever.
Absolutely. Fantastic. Okay. Well, we will check that out. You interrupted a thought, though. What were you talking about? Oh, Costa Rica. You guys, you did your class. It's on Kelby One. So it's available to anyone that's a subscriber to Kelby One, right?
Yes. Yes. Again, it's about an hour and a half, and
what kind of pictures do you talk about?
Well, we have the monkey pictures back, but I've been a lot of places. We've been about 100 countries. We've been scuba diving all over the planet. The rainforest is the hardest place to take pictures for what you said. The monkey, the bird is up in the tree, it's backlit, or the sloth is surrounded. There's branches in front of, behind, and to the side. It's moving around. So I talk about the challenges of doing that. I talk about the equipment. I talk about post-processing. But again, I get half the credit for the pictures, because Dennis, you know, our guide there, Dennis Atencio Valverde, he gets the other half, because we're driving around and he says, you know, look, you know, there's a sloth upside down in a tree, or, you know, there's a scarlet macaw, you know, flying around. He's amazing. It's like the guides in Africa.
Yeah. My goal on that trip at the beginning of it was to find one thing that they didn't see first and be like, hey, did you guys see that? And it didn't happen the entire time. Didn't happen the whole time. So yeah, those guys are great. Yeah. And they're also amazing because they're such good photographers, and Dennis or whoever is able to say, you know what, if you just like lowered your camera 6 inches and came right over here, your background's going to be, you know, infinitely better. And he's exactly right. And that's all it takes sometimes, is just a tiny bit of movement, and it makes a huge difference.
Oh yeah. Well, in all photography, but especially there with the branches. And Dennis and Bryce Johnson and Brian Johnson, two of the partners, actually, what we did is I did about a 20-minute interview with them. And it's on YouTube. I'll send you the link. It's on YouTube. So it's not even part of the Kelby class. It's like a bonus that so anyone can see it.
Yeah, that photo that Bryce got, the first one that he shows where that hummingbird's going for the insect, is just phenomenal.
We were there.
We all missed it, you know. And he got it. The shot is a hummingbird with its wing, the eyes and the head tack sharp. The wings are a little blurred, and it's just about to eat an insect. It's an amazing shot. But this was taken at one of the ecological centers where they bring college students into this one. We went to another one where they bring high school students. This one we're talking about, I forget the name of it, Tarde. It's a pretty far.
Right outside the national park there.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Close to that. So anyway, that's where that picture was taken. But again, they bring the students in there because, just like with our planet, education, if you don't understand how all this stuff works together and how important each of these elements, and how if you're, you know, people like in the ocean, we scuba dive for 20 years, people wanted to protect the dolphins, but they didn't really care about the mangroves. Well, the mangroves are just as important to the reef as the reef. So it's the same thing in the rainforest, though, that you have to protect the whole ecosystem. It's just not protecting, you know, a sloth or whatever.
Yeah, that was the best part to that trip, was that, you know, I could take people there and go, this should be your camera settings, whatever, you'll get a good picture. But these guys knew every animal, they knew every plant and flower. We had Ann Belmont, our flower photographer, she was there, and she's asking these guys, and they've got degrees in these things. It's not just like, you know, they're just like a couple local guys they happened to grab. Like, these guys really knew what they were talking about. So that was made it really a special trip for us.
Well, that's one of the great things about staying at Crocodile Bay. Not only do you have the experts and nice rooms and everything, but also the sushi.
Yeah, how did you like the food, Susan? Oh, you said you're a foodie, right?
I was going to say sushi.
And sashimi every night.
And they brought out the sashimi platter, yeah? Uh-huh.
That was amazing.
It was swimming like 3 hours ago, and it's on the plate. It's really amazing.
This is pretty funny because I've been listening to Rick's podcast. You know, it's probably been like 10 years now. You know, I mean, you have the new one now, but when you would do the one back in the day, I've been listening to your podcast forever. And I remember listening, you'd be like, oh, we got to get sushi. And I didn't like sushi. I was like, what was I thinking? I mean, if Rick likes it, and now I've gotten to the point where I love sushi too. So it's crazy. But, you know, I guess people change in 10 years.
Well, we also say photography is a great, we share a lot, photographers, right? So that's just another part of sharing locations. You share what's good. But by the way, sushi at Crocodile Bay is not like sushi in, you know.
Bro, no, nonsense.
Yeah, Chicago, yeah. Uh-huh.
And you have a Costa Rica event too, right?
Yeah, so we're doing Out of Costa Rica, and it's coming up this July. And if people are interested, we got a couple more spots left. It's going to be really fun. We have Lisa Langell and Steve Perry are going to be a couple of our instructors, and Ann Belmont. She's going to be doing flower photography, and I can help people get the right camera settings. So, so yeah, we're doing that too.
So Steve Perry, this is what happened to him after he left Journey?
Yeah, exactly. I asked him that. Apparently, he doesn't think that joke's funny anymore. Steve Perry, the photographer, and Steve Perry, the lead singer from Journey. Yeah.
Well, as a couple with our last name being Salmon, it's like we get that. Salmon jokes that we heard about our last.
Oh, I'm sure that was my favorite though. The other day, the surf and turf. What was that one?
Oh yeah, what happened is I took a. I have a wolf sweater. I've had this actually since before we were married, so I've had it about almost 50 years, and it still fits, by the way. Which,
good for you.
Yeah, you got to stay healthy, and eat healthy, and thanks to Susan. But anyway, I took a picture of it, and I posted it, and I tagged Art Wolf. I said, Art, who do you think I'm thinking about, right? So I had the picture of me with the wolf sweater. So Art Wolf posts a picture of him with a salmon shirt. So that's what we wanted, like surf and turf.
That was very fun.
That's right. Speaking of salmon shirts, I've been kind of like leaning into my computer here, but I've got my my Rick Salmon shirt on as we do our thing here.
Well, thank you.
Here, I should have my mic over here, so everyone, whatever, it's all screwed up. But I
have our Out of Chicago shirts on.
And I have my salmonisms on the back, and yeah. Well, I mean, I think we gotta do a whole thing just on the salmonisms, but we're going to save that. I think we should do some videos if you're up for it, and you go in depth on each one of them just a little bit. But we'll talk after we're done with the podcast. So last thing. So you did the photo road trip book for Route 66. You did the photo road trip book. You know what I'm going to ask for the Oregon coast. What's next, guys?
Well, we could say it, but someone might copy the idea.
Oh, it's a big secret. This is where you're supposed to reveal your big secrets. All right. No, I get it.
I won't reveal that secret, but I am working on my 40th book, and it's going to have no pictures in it. It's a photography book. It's good. So far, it's about 15,000 words. I sent it to my brother, and I just already liked it. It's a photography book with the only picture is going to be the picture on the cover, because this is really an inspirational book, and I don't want people to be distracted by my pictures or think that, you know, okay, this guy thinks this is a good picture. So it's just words. Now, this is not a new idea. You know, there are photography books out. Susan Sontag, is that how you say her name? She did a book a while ago on photography. Mm-hmm. So what's I like about this is I'm saying to myself every time I open the document, right now all the chapters are back in one document. I said, this better be pretty damn good and pretty damn interesting if I want to. So right. I'm setting the bar really high for myself on this.
Oh, I can't wait. Actually, it's very similar to what you've been doing with all the podcasts is, you know, people go, how do you do a photography podcast and it's audio only?
Right. So yeah. It's the same.
So, yeah. So, I can't wait for that. Does this have a title yet?
Well, it does, but...
Again, a secret so that people don't steal it.
It's a self-help book. And I think it's different. It's definitely different. And at this point in my life, I'm having so much fun doing it.
Yeah. I mean, I just love the idea because it's like we said earlier, you know, going to take a photograph, taking photographs is not just about getting pictures on your hard drive. There's so much more to it and how it affects your whole life. I mean, yeah. So I'm really looking forward to the book.
Oh, great. Well, thank you.
Yeah, fantastic. Anything else I missed, guys? Like, where can we, besides Instagram, where can we follow you, Rick, or anything else? Any other topics you want to talk about before I let you guys go?
No. I think you covered it. Susan's amazing on Instagram, and I'm just ricksalmon.com. We have workshops and stuff like that coming up, and you did a great job. And, you know, I remember you when. How many years has it been, Chuck, since I've known you? Wow. Is that what I called you?
That is exactly what it is. But I thought you just did it. Like, I didn't think that was intentional. That was a joke. Yes, exactly right. Yeah, when you were the keynote speaker at Out of Chicago in probably 2016, yeah, I told that story. And I asked my whole team, like, can I tell this story before, you know, or is that bad? And the story was that, you know, I was on, well, I wasn't even on the show. No, I was just a nobody. That's right. And you're like, wow, there's this great HDR photographer. You got to follow him in Chicago. I'm like, he might be talking about me. He goes, you got to follow Chuck Smith. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. As you mentioned it on the podcast. I love it. But yeah.
But that's how we got to know each other. I was on somewhere, Twitter or something. I see these amazing HDR and natural architectural shots that you had taken. I said, I got to get this guy on the podcast. This is
you know, I know what it is. I know what it is that I signed up to do. I forgot what you called them, but like the 1 hour critique that you would do online.
Yeah. I give tough love.
And tough love. Exactly. That's what it was. Yes. And it wasn't very tough. I remember you were very complimentary, but, go ahead.
Well, the thing is people come on these tough loves because they want the reviews. And I think the first thing I said to you, Chris, was, why are you coming to me?
Which is ridiculous, but thank you.
Nice, but that's good.
You know, actually, what that was, and we'll just keep rambling on with the podcast, and people can turn it off if they want. But that was a huge turning point in my career, my life, whatever. Because I remember you saying, like, you don't need to work on the photography; you should be leading workshops. You should be doing. And I, at that point, I hadn't done anything. And so, I mean, Rick has been a huge mentor in my life and a huge, I mean, I wouldn't be where I am without him. And really it was that he said, you should try doing a workshop. I mean, people follow you on your blog, try doing a workshop. And I remember going, that's ridiculous. And we put one up and the next day it was sold out and it's now we're doing out of everywhere. So, so thank you, Rick, for being the impetus that.
Like Susan said, that's very sweet. But again, you're going to go down in history as the guy who said, back in the digital SLR.
That's right. That's right. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, and you'll still go down in history as the godfather of photography, which we should have mentioned right off the bat. But yeah, I love it. So it's just been a huge pleasure to have both of you guys on the show. Thank you so much. I can't wait to hang out at Out of Oregon. And hopefully we see you all over the place. So,
all right. Guys.
So that's going to be our again, just rambling on in the podcast here, but that's we're going to do our instructor dinner at the brewery. So, see, I reveal my secrets on the show. You guys are just holding back, but I'm kidding. All right, so thank you so much. Thanks for being on the show. It was great having both of you guys. Rick's been on the show a couple of times, but to have both of you and offer both of your perspectives on the photographer's perspective. Thank you, Susan. Thank you, Rick. And we'll see you soon.
Thank you. You did a great job as a host.
And we'll see you soon.
Love you guys. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
F8, The Photographer's Perspective is hosted by me, Chris Smith, and produced by Out of Chicago. A special thanks to all photographers that share their inside knowledge to make this possible. We release a new episode each week, so be sure to subscribe to the show wherever podcasts are found. To learn more about Out of Chicago and upcoming events, go to outofchicago.com. Subscribe to our mailing list to stay connected and be the first to know of our next new location where you can shoot side by side with the pros.